Welcome to Living the Life in Tech, a weekly podcast series with CIOs, CISOs, and technology leaders that are sculpting the current tech landscape. Each episode, we aim to provide deep insights from our guests, covering off areas that include leadership, innovation, security, and technology that will assist you and your team in evolving your business. If you enjoy this episode of the podcast, we would love you to provide us with a rating on iTunes or any other source you may be using, along with subscribing to the podcast so you don't miss a thing. We also encourage you to subscribe to our weekly newsletter at ciotechasia.com.
Yes, hello and welcome to another episode of Living the Life in Tech. My name is Tyra McGuigan. I'm the founder and CEO for CIO Tech Asia, where today I'm joined with Nikki Doble, who is the Group Chief Information Officer for Covermore Insurance. So, Nikki, welcome to the show, and what a fascinating time it must be for you right now and the team there at Covermore Insurance during this pandemic.
Yeah, thank you. It's fun to join you, and it's been really, really busy, but I think one of the good things is that people actually want to know what we're doing. So it's nice when you get to talk about the exciting stuff. It's a bit like therapy, you know, when you're having a bad day, there's someone there, like, what are you doing? it's good.
Now, Nikki, you started working on a service desk some 25 years ago, and today you sit there, obviously, the global chief information officer at Covermore with some, 140 people, I believe, reporting into you across 7 countries. So no doubt you have lived an interesting journey. But could you explain just to our listeners a little more around who Covermore is and your overall responsibilities, really, within the organisation?
Sure. So Covermore Group has a number of different entities under it. We're known by different names in different countries. So Universal Assistant in Latin America, Halo in the UK, Travel Tag in India, and Travel Ex in the US. So we've got different brands. And predominantly we're a travel insurance provider. And then we also have an assistance arm to our business, so a medical assistance arm, which in Australia and Asia is known as WTP, so World Travel Protection. And we do a medical repatriation. So when people are on holidays and they've fallen ill or they've had an accident, this arm of the business brings you back or tells you what doctor to go to. If you've had a head injury in Fiji, we'll say that's the best head injury doctor and go over there. So it's predominantly around leisure and corporate travel, but all around the travel industry is where we're focused.
And obviously being around that travel industry, which we will dive into a lot deeper through this chat, but obviously one of the most affected industries through this pandemic at the moment. But look, I wanted to talk today a little deeper around pandemic transformation. Obviously being linked to the travel industry was one of the hardest sectors to be hit, but how did you manage to bring strategy and technology together in ways you might never have been able to imagine just a few months ago?
Yeah, it certainly has helped our digital strategy along, and it's helped our business focus much better because, before we had more options because, one, we had more players in the market or more partners to go with, and, when you've got more money, you're allowed to use it different ways, yeah? So this has certainly allowed the business to focus much more clearly, and obviously as a technologist, our job is to write technical strategy that supports the business strategy. So in our response, the business has been very, very focused in saying, these are the three areas that we're going to play in now. And then the next sentence is kind of like, in technology, how are you going to get us there in the time frames that we're doing? So, obviously there was the initial response, which was very difficult. Difficult is the word because it was an intense period of time. And now we're very much focused on the strategic restoration. But the work's been relentless throughout the whole way through. But the business is much, much more focused on going, that's the hill, that's where we're going.
And obviously we might have, normally we might have been looking at a shift in the business model for, different partners and so forth. But obviously with the pandemic, it's affected the industry and, your partners and and everyone really within that sector. So where you might have been able to change one particular area of the business to adapt to other, you've pretty much had to kind of rebuild and restructure everything within the business itself. So where do you start with that, and what are the kind of the first steps you take in being able to effectively execute it?
Well, like you were saying with the partners, if I talk to APAC region, you know, we were very heavily focused on B2C customers. So we put white label travel insurance into an airline's website, for example. And in the UK, it was much more focused on the direct business. So we've had to go, you know what, some of our big partners have fallen away. So Virgin Airlines went into administration. Some of our big travel providers were in serious trouble. So it's made us go, okay, we can't put all our eggs in one basket now. We've got to do B2C and B2B as equally as good as each other, because we've learned our lesson that one whole industry can, one whole channel or partners can move away. When before you kind of went on, one business might go under, you wouldn't imagine that you'd have mass, you know, issues with your partners quite like that. So we're very focused now on our B2C and our B2B.
And I'm assuming sort of within the business itself, you had to move most of the business to sort of 100% remote workforce. Was that the case in most of the countries or?
Yeah, and that was difficult because, as you said earlier, we've had, you know, we're across 22 countries, and some countries were easy. You know, the yep. UK, Ireland, they were already predominantly, they were born in the cloud, those companies. So they were easy. They just kind of packed up their laptops and went home, and we did a little bit of work around those. Other ones like Latam and the call centres in Australia, we weren't set up for that. You know, there was, you know, the BCP plans was to move them to a different site. So the call volumes were very, very high, both on the claim side and the medical assistance. So we saw an 80% increase in our call volume during that time. And along with all the other businesses, we couldn't get the phone lines that we needed increased because everyone was having the same problem, you know. So it was just escalated. So what we did was we actually built a call centre in 4 days on AWS stack and yeah. moved one of our businesses out to that so that we could split the calls across and get the call volume down. Because, you know, you've got medical assistance, we've got an SLA of 15 to 20 seconds, and if you're worried about your loved one that's just fallen off a jet ski, you can't have an IVR that says we'll get to you in 1.5 hours. You know, we've still got to answer that call. So that was probably the most difficult part of it. And then, you know, silly things tripped you up, like, you know, the $800 headsets that we've got in the call centres that are all noise cancelling and very fancy don't work on a home machine. So we're running around trying to find, you know, cheap
headsets.
Going, right, well, because they were the kind of blockers that you had, the big end tech, the stuff that you kind of pride yourself on because that's your, you know enterprise technology, and then it's, gosh, we don't have enough of the right cheap headset that is what's got you scrambling, you know, as you're waiting for things to go into lockdown. And some countries locked down at different times, so there was that constant kind of what's happening today in that country, what do we need, to reprioritise the work that we're doing in order to get them home sooner. And, you know, it was a bit frantic, but that March 4 is the day that I hold out, but it all just went crazy, came to town on our floor. So, yeah.
Now, obviously, you've got a lot of developers there working for you as well. How did you go about that? Because I know you guys did invest quite heavily in your sort of API library, which is something that you had planned to do but hadn't started on. So how was that in terms of, obviously, the developers? Did you manage to lose many developers, or did you keep most of them there and take on more work, or how did that work?
Yeah, well, look, I was fortunate in that last year I had actually done a major restructure across the technology group. So that was, we call that the IT operating model from a global perspective. So that kind of moved the right people into the right places back in October. So when that crunch came, we were already pretty good. There wasn't a lot of you know, excess in our teams already. So I wanted to really hold on to those devs. So we, you know, pretty much, you know, I said March 5th, I was dropping or giving notice to providers to say, hey, we know we're going to get hit hard by what's about to happen. And I wanted to keep those dev teams. So what we did was we pretty much started retraining them almost straight away into technologies that perhaps they weren't necessarily strong in. So, you know, it might not have been their core skills, but they've done dabbled in it a little bit. We straight away went into, well, what can we bring in-house and keep our people employed? Because we knew that that was still coming. And the business is very strategic. You know, we're owned by Zurich. So, again, once you pass that initial response of, oh, my God, we've got to get everybody home, we very quickly went into what does it look like in 6 months, what does it look like in 12 months, and what does your team need to be? And we made that decision that we had to retain our team.
Yeah.
And we would do that as much as we can. And if that meant people, you know, getting pushed into things, they kind of went, oh, that's not the Motronic plan. It was like, you got to do it because we've got to get through this together. And the team certainly, I mean, everyone's grateful for that. Now, it was a lot of uncertainty for the whole industry at the time, but, you know, we've come through it. We're busier than what we've actually been in probably before because our work has changed and the deadlines are a lot quicker.
Yeah.
Because obviously we want to get tech out before the market recovers now. And, you know, they've got these skill sets, and so you've got to be happy with that when we're in such a difficult time for other people, you know, in other companies that don't have that job certainty.
Yeah, no, look, absolutely. And I mean, obviously now there's a massive shift in the way that people are traveling or spending, you know, their money around sort of travel insurance itself. So obviously technology needs to really shift from, you know, serving the business to serving the customers. But what have you now been sort of implementing within the business to kind of jump along on that sort of that wave?
Yeah, so like I said, the business has gotten, I have to give them full kudos because sometimes it's, oh, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that. Now they're very much, bang, 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 this is what we're going to do.
Yeah.
And so that's made it really easy to go, okay, these are the technologies that we're going to focus on because they're your new target markets. But we're finding that COVID's changed people's behaviour. So, you know, Nana and Pop are now using Zoom. And Nana and Pop are probably going to go back to the telephone after this, but yeah, we're finding that a lot more people will stay with the technology adoption that they've had to pick up during COVID. And that includes apps that will track you. So we've got an app called the Travel Tracker, which we've pushed through. This was one of the ones that we were doing externally. When the crunch came, we brought it in-house, retrained some of our people and pushed forward on it. We've released and we've got another release coming up. And that tracks your location. So it will put a pop-up if you're going into an area that we, you know, deem is unsafe, or you might set it to say, hey, if you haven't heard from me in 3 days, can you ping me? So those sorts of things, prior to COVID, they had a specific place. Yeah? So some corporates might say, if you're travelling overseas, we want you to do this. But not so many leisure travellers would necessarily go, oh, I want to put a travel tracker on. Now, because they've been forced to with the COVID trackers and things at different, you know, I think every country's rolled one out, they're much more au fait with it. So all of a sudden we thought that it was one target market that we were building for when we started that project. Now we've gone, actually, you know what, the target market is much, much bigger because we know more people now are going to be thinking about their health when they travel, and they're going to be much more comfortable, you know, putting an app that does geolocation on their phone because they know that we can provide them assistance if they need it.
And I know that you're moving sort of post-COVID now, you're moving to more of a cross-functional business, so UX mm-hmm. and technology product team, similar to what is, you know, common practice in tech companies such as Apple.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Tell us a little bit more around that, because obviously there's some interesting, you know, I suppose, understandings or findings from your side as to sort of how that concept fell into place.
Yeah, I think we're not there yet. I think, I mean, we've certainly started down that path and the business have brought in and said, okay, we need to do product management and we need to think about this more strategically when we're doing our piece. I think it's a longer transformation. Like I do feel it's a bit of a transformation that companies need to go on, that more people are doing product. The biggest thing that I've found was that, well, one, we had to do some restructuring of teams to get those cross-functional teams happening. So we've seen a lot of efficiency gains where things weren't handed off between teams anymore because they all care about one particular product stack.
Yeah.
We've seen, and also in our business, people used to switch product and policy a lot. So they used to go, we've got a product for that. No, you've got a policy for that. A product is an entire end-to-end experience for the customer. So now we say, okay, we've got a policy and this is an additional add-on and this is a service and these are all the things that go with that. So they've got a better idea of it's just not selling a policy. What else are we selling around that? And what does that experience feel like? So prior, you know, there was a policy for everything. There was a policy, you know, for the sun rising on Sunday. Like, you know, I'm going to be flipping down. I'm sure underwriting will kill me for saying that. But you know, there was a policy for everything. But now we're kind of going, actually, these are our products and these are the policies that we need. And these are perhaps some new policies that feed into a product now because there's more domestic leisure. So we might want to look at car hire, for example, because people aren't going to do long-haul flights. So things have certainly changed, and I think there's more conscious decisioning around the long-term, the life of a product, which is nice. So it's more strategic thinking about what we're offering.
Now, Nikki, there was an article I read the other day, and I know, and I'll just quote from what you said. Transformation is a skill set which some people have. Some can learn and some will simply never grasp.
Yes.
But when the dust settles after COVID-19, every CIO still standing will be able to put their hand on their heart and say, I can do transformation. Very, very interesting quote there. But when will that word, will there, you know, obviously the word transformation, when will that stop?
Yeah, I think it's going to go with by the wayside with like digital, you know, no one's digital anymore, everybody's digital. So I think that after transformation, I'm not sure. I mean, why I say that is because not everybody's got the stomach for, like a stomach for transformation. You know, transformation, there's a lot of ambiguity with it. And I think it was always a word that was a little bit overused or misused, and that, oh, we're doing a transformation. A transformation means you've got, you know, change happening across people, process and technology, and it's uncomfortable for a period of time. So I think that's been forced on people. So previously people that kind of went, we'll go and do it slow and steady and, you know, whatever, that's been forced on, and that it's a do or die and we have to transform and we have to do it now. So the burning platforms were kind of given to everybody. No one had a choice to kind of go, oh, we're not going to do that. Everybody had to do that. So I think people that perhaps in the past might have gone, oh, I'm not the transformation type, are suddenly going to be the transformation type. And then people like myself that are adrenaline junkies and love transformation, it's kind of like, more.
Yeah,
yeah. Here's my next one. So, yeah, look, some people like it, some people don't. But I think in 6 months' time, I think, yeah, everyone would have had a transformation
in some capacity, yeah. For sure. Well, obviously we're going to see a lot more sort of non-technologists coming in to IT under the so-called digital banner itself. But where do you see that play within CIOs and CISOs in the near future?
As you get more senior, you lose your technical skills. Or mind you, you know, as you mentioned, service desk, I still give service desk a very hard time. So maybe you don't lose that many, but because you pick up a lot along the way. I think there's a place for CIOs and CISOs coming in without huge technical skills. Look, I'm not a big fan. If you were going to do something like that, then you'd need to have some very strong technologists working for you, like people that really knew their craft inside and out. At that C level, you know, risk is very, very important. Understanding that, understanding your financials at this level is very important as well. So, you know, it becomes more than just technology. So, you know, this is why people can come in and kind of be placed into a CIO role or a CISO role, because it's not just about the technology. But if you if you're coming through a path that doesn't have technology, I'd make sure that your right hand and your left hand person have a technology background. Although it doesn't take long to come unstuck. I mean, a couple of bad decisions in tech and you're swimming in the deep end.
And I'm interested to know as well, obviously with the IT, you're obviously technology team and then the executive team as well within the business itself. How has this pandemic kind of brought you guys together and kind of aligned yourselves, you know, closer to your end goal?
It's been really good. And I mean, I know that that's not going to be for everyone and everywhere, but certainly within the Covermore group, it's been good. I think we, as an IT area and other industries would have done this as well, the fact that we got people and we were able to respond so quickly and we got people work from home remotely globally in such a short period of time with pretty much very little disruption gave us a lot of credibility because, you know, people tend to talk about IT when it's going wrong, you know, the outages or something's happened. And so it's nice to be able to say, hey, we did this, we got your business doing this in a really short period of time. So I think that got us a lot of credibility. And now they're so dependent on us to execute on their business strategy, which they always have been. But I think they really recognise now that you know, if we've got this travel tracker app and you know, the API library to help our partners, and there's some, you know, we're starting to dabble in machine learning, which we hope to have a product for our partners up by the end of the year. You know, I think they're really seeing just how critical technology is to them and how much pressure technology teams are actually under, because I think the pandemic has given them more insight to the complexity of what we're used to every day. And I think that's given us some credibility and respect, I suppose. I mean, not that I was not respected, but I think they've kind of gone, actually, it's not as easy as what we might have thought it was. And, gosh, they've done a good job to get us where they have. So, and they're getting us to the next stage. So, yeah, it's been good. It's certainly brought our business and technology folk together. And I think at multiple levels, but certainly at the exec leadership team level.
Now, besides the fact that you can now stand there and say you do transformation, what has been the biggest learning curve for you through this over these last sort of 5 months?
Oh, I think I've always had an appetite for having a lot on, but I do feel I need a little bit of a holiday. Like, it's just been really quite exhausting, and I think if I'm feeling like that, my team's feeling like that. So I think the thing that I'm being more mindful of than perhaps in the past is that, you know, when you're pushing your team, when you're pushing your area for a big project, there's a you know that there's an end date to that project, and you go, well, come, you know, June 20 we go live and everyone can sit back a little bit and we'll be okay. I don't know when this pressure is going to stop for my team. So I think my biggest learning is going, well, how can I make sure I've protected them? So I've protected them from that first hit of we've got to get cut costs. You know, our team's a huge budget. How do we do that? So I've protected them from that bit. And now it's kind of like, well, how long is the next bit? Because this pressure at the moment is quite, you know, it's relentless. Like, we've got a lot to deliver. So, you know, I think it's probably going to be, how do I take care of my people will be the lesson that I'm learning. And, you know, when you don't know when there's an end date on how soon the pressure will come off and things will be done, you know, when done's done. I don't know.
Yeah, and I look 100%. And I think most businesses as well, I think, you know, people in positions similar to yourself would all be going through the same thing. And I think, you know, it gets to a stage, it does take toll on teams, and there comes a stage where you know, they're, you know, people are humans, right, at the end of the day. So that's kind of plays a big factor outside of the overall business, you know, strategy and plans as well. So, but look, Nikki, thank you so much for joining us today on Living a Life in Tech. I know that, you know, you obviously do want to get away travel, but I know you also enjoy your running. So hopefully you've been able to get out and jog around a little bit.
I've been doing a lot of running. I know. I can run and pretend that I'm going over London Bridge or something.
Good stuff. Well, look, thank you once again. Some great stuff. I mean, what you guys have achieved in such a short period of time, I think is amazing. And it kind of really opens the eyes up for other people within your sector itself. So I wish you guys all the very best. And, you know, no doubt the next 6 to 12 months is still going to be a busy and a hard time for your industry.
Yes, thank you very much. And yeah, it'll be tough, but you know, I think in the end we'll get through it, and from a technology point of view, we'll be a lot stronger. So that's a good part of it.
All right, Nikki, thanks again.
Thank you.